On the Record with Gavin Riley on News Talk.
Welcome back, Gavin Riley with you on the record this Sunday lunchtime. 53106 is the number for your texts. Now, what do Joe Dolan, Conor Cruz O'Brien and the Springboks all have in common? Well, they're all part of the story of Ireland's strange history with apartheid South Africa. Now, today is the birthday, or rather would have been the birthday, of Nelson Mandela. And although many will recall the famous Dunn's Stores strike against the importation of South African goods, the story of the anti-apartheid movement in Ireland doesn't begin or end there. And Donal Fallon has popped in on this sweltering Sunday lunchtime to tell us all about it. Donal, good afternoon. How are you?
Good to be here.
Are you enjoying a little bit of an outdoor summer yesterday?
I'm enjoying a bit of an outdoor summer today, going to Croke Park to watch the Dubs, which I'm really, really looking forward to.
I hope you get your backsides handed to you. Nelson Mandela's arrival in Ireland in 1990 is something a lot of people will recall, because it too was a fairly busy day for Dublin as well.
It was a great day to be in Dublin. And Nelson Mandela Madiba, born on this day in 1918, in his own way, he is part of the history of this city, as you mentioned, coming here in 1990, not long after his release from prison, to personally accept the freedom of the city of Dublin. And it's kind of touching, and it's also funny. His handwritten speech survives. There's a seriousness in some of his words. My wife and I are moved by the fact that of the many honours conferred on us whilst we were in prison, Dublin was the first capital city to give us its freedom. We've come here to express our personal thanks to you for the pioneering role you've played in the anti-apartheid struggle. But then scribbled in margins in the pen are the words, congratulations also to your wonderful football team. It was the day.
Because this is June or July 1990, so yeah, there's a lot going on. Yeah,
from Italia 90. So there was a certain euphoria in that visit and the broader context of the day on which it happened. But it's worth saying the road to that point was long,
yes. You know,
both for Mandela personally and for those around the world who rallied against apartheid in South Africa. And in Ireland, the history of the anti-apartheid movement, it takes us through some incredible places, from the corridors of Trinity College and a lecturer to Mary Robinson, who went on to become a government minister of the ANC, to, believe it or not, pickets on Joe shows, pickets on Joe Dolan concerts.
The pickets on Joe Dolan concerts we will come back to, because that is a fascinating and very, very unexpected turn in this whole thing. But it probably is worth saying, though, that by the time that Mandela came here, the anti-apartheid movement in Ireland was already not just a few years, but rather decades old.
Which is incredible. The Irish anti-apartheid movement did not begin with the courage of a Dunn's Stores cashier in 1984, but two decades earlier in the 1960s, with the birth of the Irish anti-apartheid movement and its founder, Kadir Asmal, great character. Many listeners will probably remember him personally. He joined the staff of the law school at Trinity College in 1964, spent 27 years at the university lecturing students who'd go on to do great things like, take up Áras an Uachtaráin. But Asmal had been recommended for the Trinity College position by Conor Cruz O'Brien, with whom he would later clash, as we'll hear in this slot, in quite spectacular style.
Now, talk to us a little bit more about Kadir Asmal, because he managed to win the support of people from right across the political spectrum during his 27 years in Ireland, including a young Bertie Ahern.
Yeah, Kadir Asmal's a brilliant political operator, and he understands that the anti-apartheid movement in Ireland, it might have some natural and obvious political allies, like the civil rights movement in the north. But that's not enough. You need to win as many people as you can to the cause. So he wins wide support across whole spectrums of Irish public life. And in the words of one great historian, his intention was that, like in Britain, the Irish anti-apartheid movement should aim to acquire broad appeal, led as much as possible by well-known local personalities. And I love this line. The small scale and social intimacy of Ireland's public life worked to his advantage. Ireland is a village. You're never more than two handshakes away from anyone in normal times. So Bertie Ahern, a young Fianna Fáil councillor, joins the movement. A young Mary Robinson, who he'd lectured in Trinity College, and Garrett Fitzgerald. And eventually, you can't be friends with everyone, as he learns. People start to fall out within the broad movement. Garrett leaves it, for example, when he refuses to deny membership to Sinn Féin. But he's trying to bring in the entire spectrum, if you will, of Irish public life, from actors like Cyril Cusack to a young Mary Robinson.
Now, there's been some aspects of this, actually, particularly given the Lions tour at the moment, which have been reanimated on television. There are a few different visits of the Springboks, the South African rugby team, which gives people the chance to demonstrate the support of the Irish and the apartheid movement. But of course, famously, it wasn't enough to actually stop some of the games from going ahead.
No, the Bucks arrive in Ireland in January 1970, and they'd been here before. That was the thing. But now there's an anti-apartheid movement which can kind of rally against the game. And they'd just been on a two-month tour of Britain. There was massive scenes of protests pretty much everywhere they went. A young Gordon Brown got himself arrested in Edinburgh. And the IRFU is in a really tough position after watching all of this happen in Britain. But they made their view clear. They said, you know, cultural and sporting relations are the last links that should be broken with a country whose laws and policies incur condemnation. This game in Lansdowne Road goes ahead. It's an 8-8 draw in front of a really small attendance, played behind barbed wire erected to prevent protesters from getting onto the pitch. But while they didn't stop the game, you know, the Irish anti-apartheid movement did succeed in winning plenty of airtime. And the banners are brilliant. There's one banner that appears the next day in the front of one of the papers, Box Amok. So what he'd done is he'd at least brought public consciousness, if you will, to the anti-apartheid movement.
Well, it also, even with half a century's remove, it just seems like a masterful PR that you've managed to hijack an event which still does go ahead, but the event itself almost becomes secondary to the protests that surround it. So from that sense, maybe it was kind of better for the movement overall. You mentioned some pickets at a Joe show. Unlikely showdowns concerning Joe Dolan. Explain to us why exactly Joe Dolan was being targeted.
And this pains me, because believe it or not, I'm a great fan of Joe Dolan's music. I love Joe Dolan and Morrissey, and they're both shrouded in controversy, it would seem. this was much
that's
more
a, that's a sequence of words that nobody in the history of the English language has ever said before.
Morrissey used to come on stage to Good Looking Woman by Joe Dolan, which I thought was incredible. The two worlds meet. But you know, South African representatives, like rugby players, you know, coming to Ireland, that was one thing. But then you have to think, what about the reverse? You know, what about Irish talent going to South Africa? So you end up with a massive financial incentive to go and play gigs there, because very few people will. So Foster and Allen go over, Phil Coulter goes over, and Joe Dolan. But Joe is absolutely enormous in South Africa. And to be honest, I mean, he's pretty big everywhere. Yeah. You know, Joe Dolan has five number ones in South Africa. He also regularly performs in the Soviet Union, where he's also very, very popular. And you see the Russian editions of Joe's singles popping up all the time on eBay. But he later tells a biographer, he says, to be honest, when I went there, I was tick. I knew nothing about apartheid. I had records in the charts over there, and I was thinking of my career. I went to South Africa for music. But you end up with Joe Dolan gigs in Dublin being picketed by the Irish anti-apartheid movement, and Joe's name and the other names appear in a UN blacklist of bands and acts who played in South Africa. So the pressure is really, really building in Ireland around these things.
Can I just get you to rewind there about 45 seconds, and can you just state again for the record that Joe Dolan has some singles in Russian that just show up from time to time?
Well, they're not in Russian, but the labels and everything else
are
in Russian.
They're in the language.
And he had a number of number one hits in the Soviet Union, which to me is incredible.
Mullingar's second best export after me, because I went to secondary school there, obviously. The biggest surprise, and we've already mentioned this as well, is the U-turn of Conor Cruise O'Brien. Now explain to us exactly what the U-turn is and how it gets him into a bit of bother.
Conor Cruise O'Brien is an incredible figure in 20th century. You couldn't write a history of 20th century Ireland without the Cruiser, as he was known, being kind
everywhere.
Of central to it. And what's remarkable about him is that he's one of the great public intellectuals of Irish life, but he moved so many times on so many issues, including censorship and South Africa. So the Cruiser had been a former chairman of the Irish anti-apartheid movement. Okay. And then in 1986, he accepts an invitation from the University of Cape Town to be a visiting lecturer.
Ooh.
And he says, I will not have my conscience run for me by Kadir Asmal. And then this really heated debate between the two follows. One of the great Late Late Show moments is the two men debating when he returns from South Africa. So it was an incredible, it wasn't the only U-turn the Cruiser made, but it was an incredible U-turn all the same.
Worth digging up. I think it occasionally gets resurfaced on television in some of those magazine shows that sort of revisit great moments of the Late Late. If you ever do spot it, worth just sitting down and rewinding it and paying a couple of minutes close attention to it, because it's a fascinating exchange. We introduced all of this though by saying that it is still Dun Stores that people recall, and it's a dispute which begins very humbly on Henry Street over grapefruit.
Yeah, and Nelson Mandela references Dun Stores in his speech, which is kind of incredible. You never thought you'd hear Nelson Mandela say the words Dun Stores. But yeah,
Better
that is
value the, beats them all.
It's the moment of moments in the Irish anti-apartheid story. A 21-year-old cashier, Mary Manning, refuses to handle grapefruits in the Duns on Henry Street. And basically what had happened is an emotion was passed by her union. But these motions are kind of passed all the time. These kind of symbolic motions.
Yeah. Here's what we think, but do we do anything about it?
No one ever does anything about them. And then this 21-year-old actually does. and everyone in the union is kind of shocked into action. We better do something. And nine of her colleagues kind of follow her out onto the streets, and they're there for more than 2 years. I mean, you look at the pictures of the picket line, everyone comes by. You know, Seamus Heaney and Michael Hartnett, two great poets. Archbishop Desmond Tutu is there too. He go on to win the Nobel Prize for Peace. And it's a really formative experience.
2 years.
More than 2 years they're on the picket
line. Actually, it's hard to think back about it, because when it didn't happen in your own time, you just kind of presume that it's one of those lightning in a bottle things that happens for a few weeks. Everyone just goes, oh yeah, we'll do that. 2 years.
Yeah, and to maintain the energy of it for 2 years plus is extraordinary. But she said in her book, like, we didn't really know much about South Africa when we began, but we learned a lot. And she has this great quote from an exiled South African living in Ireland, a member of the ANC, who was trying to explain to the young Dunns workers, mostly young women in their late teens and 20s, what it was all about. And he said, you have to imagine South Africa as a pint of Guinness. The vast majority of it's black and a tiny minority is white. And just like a freshly poured pint, the white sits firmly on top of the black. Brilliant.
Well, there's an analogy that was perfectly chosen for the audience that it was going to. Kadir Osmil goes back to South Africa, but we do have Mandela coming back to Ireland a couple of other times too.
Yeah, when it was all over, Kadir Osmil goes back. He's elected to the ANC national exec. He becomes a member of the government cabinet, even Minister for Education in the late 1990s. And he's not uncritical, actually, of the direction South Africa went in. A lot of the promise was never delivered. He dies in 2011, and he leaves behind a really great autobiography called Politics in My Blood. And what I like about it, I'm always interested in the observations of outsiders on Ireland. He talks of the day Mandela came back to Dublin, and he writes very beautifully. As Mandela's motorcade travelled from the airport, there were shouts of ooh-ah, Paul McGrath's da from the affectionate Dublin working class fans who lined the route into the city. I just think that's absolutely brilliant. Mm. And Mandela came back twice. He got an honorary doctorate from Trinity. Mm. And there was, of course, the very moving Special Olympics ceremony.
Yes,
incredible
thing. The one I remember, I was there on the day, and I just remember that the place, there were plenty of great moments at that, where the whole stadium just seemed to like uprise in this cauldron of praise and applause and of support. But when Mandela showed up on the stage, it was another level.
And you know, when you're driving across rural Ireland today and you still see those little signs outside villages, you know, host town too.
Yeah.
I just think it was a really beautiful thing that we all experienced together. And he kind of retained a great love for Ireland. What I think is amazing about Mandela, he could maintain friendships with people in very different spheres of Irish life who probably didn't get on particularly well with each other. So Bono recalled that to him, principles and pragmatism were not foes. They went hand in hand. And then, of course, you had Richard McCauley and Gerry Adams from Sinn Féin, who were in Mandela's final guard of honour. So I think very few people had both Bono and Gerry Adams in their phone books, but that was Nelson Mandela.
You've just reminded me, I had a totally repressed memory, but you've reminded me that Trim, host town to Botswana, of the 2003 Special Olympics, I ended up finding myself on the back of a lorry playing the music to the Botswana national anthem when the athletes were being introduced to the crowd in Trim. Please, nobody ever dig up any footage of me playing that. That was a repressed memory.
You'd be unreeling in the ears.
You never know. Or Donalback in anger, the Virgin endorsed equivalent. Donald Fallon, as ever, thank you very much for that. Donald Fallon, author of the Come Here To Me books and of Henrietta Street from Tenement to Suburbia. And he's the presenter of the Three Castles Burning podcast on Dublin history, which you'll find everywhere you get your audio online. That is all we've got time for you on this Sunday lunchtime. A big thank you to today's production team, led by Simon Keane, also featuring JJ Clark. The producer is Stephen Jordan. Stephen McClune was on sound. To play us out, we're going to play out with the Specials with Nelson Mandela, a song which is actually credited with beginning to garner support for Nelson Mandela and the ANC's cause elsewhere in Europe, because it wasn't always as popular in other parts of Europe as it was in Ireland. But before that, just because we mentioned his visit to Dublin, a little clip of Nelson Mandela addressing Dáil Éireann in July 1990. For me, Gavin Riley, and all the team, enjoy the rest of your Sunday.